Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination. Hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome up, Big Section Jacks. I'm Tom Arrow. We have Ricky on the board, as we do every Friday. S&P futures up 20, and the NASDAQ futures up 148. We're going to try and have a big day today. We'll see. You know, we're going to keep sneaking up. Yesterday we turned the other way. Tesla was actually down, but it's back up today. Maybe he's back at Mar-a-Lago. We'll see. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I am doing fine.
I ran into some Indiana creatures last night. They're all fired up for the big game.
They should be.
Yeah, they should be.
They should be. And you know, I'm sort of looking forward to, you know, the buzz that we're going to have in town, because there are, as you may recall, when Notre Dame and Indiana used to play every year in basketball at alternating home and homes, that South Bend was kind of a Notre Dame football town, but an Indiana basketball town. Even if Notre Dame was really good, that's still the primary loyalty. So there are a lot of Indiana fans around here, and probably part of the reason that it was in a Notre Dame football town was because Indiana football was pretty irrelevant for the most part.
Well, the Irish were, they had to be way earlier, too, in the football, I would think.
Yeah. So, you know, the point being that locally there's a lot of Indiana fans, but there's going to be a lot of people who come to town, day trippers from Indianapolis, you know, from that area. They'll probably bring us a contingent of students up here. So I think the stadium will be a pretty cool place to be if it weren't so damn cold. So I'm not planning to go to the game. But if it's not too bad, if the weather's decent, I'll go over to campus on Friday afternoon and check it out.
You mean steal from other people's tailgates?
Well, I could do that too, and I may have some friends in town, but now I really hadn't been thinking in those terms.
Is that pulled pork? Wow, it looks like an Italian beef. Just saying.
I did it one this year, I was walking by a bunch of young people, and they were playing some older music, and Won't Get Fooled Again was on.
Yeah.
Now, if you know that song, you know it has one of the all-time great rock and roll screams in it, which none of these young people knew. So I coached them through it, and I said, you have to join me when the scream comes. I'll give you the cue, and then everybody has to give it the Roger Daltrey's, yeah!
Did you get a beer and burger reward for this?
No, I just said, nice job, and kept walking to where I was going.
Oh, there you go. It should be fun. I sort of wish it was the 12 o'clock game on Saturday for people that are going, or at least the 3:30 game. But it'll be fun. I mean,
it would be nice, because you know, everybody who's coming, they either must stay overnight. There's, you know, for the day trippers, they're going to have to stay overnight, or go part way back and maybe, you know, get a room in Kokomo or someplace like that along the way. I am sure, I haven't looked into it, but I am sure it's a typical football room rate weekend where they, you know, they have a two-night minimum and charge you, $250 a night for the Motel 6 and much more for a decent place.
So, you know, you're not up on the news from Chicago, just saying. You don't have
to
do it.
That's what we pay you for, Tom. Yeah. I listen to the intro every time we do it.
Yeah, well, we have the Chicago South Shore and South Bend Railroad.
Yeah, I actually sent you that, didn't I?
Yeah, see? You are up on it. Now, how many people are going to be on that 1:30 train home? You know, if you lived in Michigan City or Ogden Dunes or someplace, that dropping you right back off at your house. That wouldn't be a bad do.
That would be perfect, yeah.
I don't know if I want to get stuck in Millennium Park.
For the listeners, because we didn't fill in the blank on that one. The South Shore, which runs from downtown Chicago and ends up at the airport in South Bend, is running some special trains just for that game, and that includes a bus ride to and from campus from the station.
And there's a train coming home at 1:30.
Yeah, there's a very late night train.
You know, back in the day, before you and I were even on the scene, they used to have parish trips. This is back when, you know, imagine a time where the people who bought the tickets were, you know, they were thankful you bought the tickets instead of you didn't give them enough money, you shouldn't have a ticket. You know, different attitude back in those days. Well,
not the way I ever remember it.
No, it was before that. It was definitely before that. It was probably when George Wendt, the actor's father, bought his season tickets in the 50s. I'll bet if you were a season ticket buyer in the 50s, they never sold out back then, did they? I don't think they did.
I don't know.
But anyway, for those long before Amtrak, well, right before Amtrak, the Grand Trunk used to run from Chicago to South Bend, all the way downtown. And they would allow guys to take the Grand... I mean, so downtown's only, what, 2 miles from campus, maybe? Mm-hmm. They would stop right downtown at the station that Kevin's always talking about now that is a data center. They would go right down the south side. We lived half a block away from the tracks, and the trains would just fly by. It was literally an hour and 25 minutes of South Bend. I think it was 75 miles an hour the whole way. They would stop at St. Thomas More, right near the parish, and they'd let everybody throw cases of beer on for the ride down there. Can you imagine that today? Then they'd all run downtown, get back on the train, and come home. They'd probably be home by dinner back in those days, and the game started at 1 o'clock and was over at, you know, 3:30 or something. Different world. But
yeah, it was a different world. It was actually a fun time to go watch football games, though.
It was
only about the ball game.
Yeah.
You know, all the rest of the crap, it didn't matter.
I still remember, there's got to be some history someplace on this one, Kevin. What the hell's his name? The coach of Southern Cal left and went to Tampa Bay when Tampa was a
McKay. Yeah.
McKay. The Southern Cal got like the ultimate spanking. They couldn't be on TV for a year. Can you imagine that today? They found out for a decade that the guy was there. Nobody even came through the admissions department to the football team. They just showed up. This is just an O.J. Simpson era. And those guys. And who was the guy before Simpson or right after? Was it Mike Farr? Was it another guy?
Oh, my goodness. They had Mike Garrett.
Yeah, Mike Garrett. That's what I'm thinking about.
But they had a whole string. It was running back you for a while.
You know, Anthony Davis. It was, there had to be like six of them.
Marcus
Allen.
Marcus Allen, yeah.
They ended up, they couldn't be on TV now, so they came to South Bend. Now this is, you know, it's long before cable. But normally, the Notre Dame-Southern Cal game was a must on, Channel 7, Wide World of Sports.
And ABC.
ABC had. But you're only allowed to be on twice a year, right?
Yeah, there was a limit on the number of national TV games you could have.
So the Irish were always on with Southern Cal.
Locally, Channel 16 could cover them.
Yeah, and I don't know if they could, Kevin. But anyway,
they did. They were always on local TV.
But I'm saying under that ruling, I don't know if they. Well, let me say this. They
might have been. I don't know.
You know, they might have been. But the thing was, there were no commercials. The game, the first half was like 55 minutes with no commercial breaks. And then,
the way God meant it to be in the first
place. Yeah, and then they went to, you know, they had the halftime was like 20 minutes because the Southern Cal band wasn't there. And I'm going to say the game started at 1. I think you walked out of there at 3:15. It was unreal. Each half was less than an hour. I'll never see a game like that again.
It's like playing running clock.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Hey, I got a question for you, Mr. Baseball. Anybody can run with this, and I did not get this answer at all, so I'm not going to say I got it. Who is the best bunter in the history of baseball?
Oh, hell, I don't know. I couldn't even hazard a guess.
I could
Rod Carew.
I would have said somebody like that. They've got this guy.
A pitcher, though.
No, those guys got, without a doubt, Mickey Mantle.
Oh, okay.
Well, the dude, until it said, now he has a little caveat here. From 1951 to 61, when Mickey Mantle could still run, I guess after that he was just Mr. Hobble, unfortunately. He had a 623 batting average when bunting. 71 hits and 114 bunts.
The way getting on base now is valued, imagine how much he would be bunting. Although the other half of the equation is the way extra base hits are valued now too is higher.
Well, it says
in other words, batting average itself is devalued.
It says if Mick had drag bunted every time he came up from the left side, he would have batted .475. He was at first base sometimes before the ball stopped rolling. That's interesting.
Well, yeah, because he was fast, and if he was a skilled bunter, sure. I get it.
I kind of wonder why, if you're a lefty, which do you think is a better shot, to pop one down the third baseline to take off or to drag bunt it?
Oh, I think if you can put a drag bunt between the pitcher and the first baseman, you'll get on every time. You don't even have to be, you still got to be fast, but you don't have to be that fast.
But you got to get it past the pitcher, though, which is
not. You got to get it past the pitcher. That's what I said. What you really want to do is you want to get it far enough that either the second baseman fields it or, if the first baseman fields it, nobody can get to first base to cover in time.
You remember the World Series? Boy, it's going back always. We got stuff to talk about. The World Series where Pete Rose was playing third base, and some guy, a bunter leadoff lefty kind of guy on the other team, this long, tall, slender black man, with Mr. Bunter. So Rose was playing the guy like 15 feet in front of the bag, just daring him to hit the ball at him. So it totally freaked the guy out because he didn't bunt, and he had a horrible series. Finally, he whacks one at Rose, a line drive. Rose snagged it out of the air just to piss the guy off. You know, Rose was an interesting character. I don't think he was the world's best guy, but anyway. But he sure intimidated the hell out of that guy.
Well, yeah, and, you know, Rose, I think I told you this before, is he – not too long before he died, he was, and they had to cancel it, not because he died, but they canceled it before, so obviously he had been sick. But Rose was supposed to speak at the Lerner Theater in downtown Elkhart. He was on kind of a speaking tour, and labeled an evening with Pete Rose. And I think that would have been a real hoot to go to, because the guy's just going to tell a whole bunch of really good stories.
Yeah, I don't think any of his teammates, he was not all that popular, I don't think, but you see, our guy Rhino's got a recast of the cancer, eh?
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, Rhino's one of the good men in baseball, I think. Anywho, the economy, we keep bumping along. What did you think of all the labor numbers we were talking about? And we talked a little bit about it on Wednesday, but I'm still confused of the massive difference between the household and the employment survey. Are we really losing people according to the household survey? Less bodies are working?
Well, we may be. I think one of you, either you or Carl, posited that that maybe you get a lot of people who are just, you know, they're working the second job to try and get ahead, and when they're still not able to maintain it, they're just kind of saying screw it. I would think that's entirely possible. It sort of depends on the area. It sort of depends on the local cultures, because some cultures aren't gonna let it go. You also may have people who started to self deport.
I wonder if people have there's not near as many cash jobs now as there used to be, except for, I guess, if you're doing stuff on the internet. But even that, you're getting paid by credit card or check or something. Mm-hmm. I wonder if people who have, you know, a job kind of off the radar, just when the phone call shows up, they just say they're not working, and when they really are. I mean, is that possible for many big numbers?
I suppose that's possible. If people are just jumping into the cash economy, I mean, we could. This is one that would take, you know, some genuine research to do. So we can speculate on possibilities, but I don't know that we're actually, you know, that in the next 20 minutes we're going to come up with any root cause on this.
Well, listeners who maybe weren't listening the other day, listeners who weren't listening, what is it, line?
Well, that's what our listeners do as soon as we start talking.
Oh, yeah, they just Tom knows those two guys out. I'm more than amused. I'm intellectually curious. If you look at the household survey, which is you call somebody's house now, who the hell how they do that today? I don't know. And say is how many people in the house are working? If it's Kevin or me, since I'm the only person live there, if I answer the phone, I'd say one person's working. That's it. If I had three jobs, I get counted once. Now, the establishment survey, which you see every month, which they flash across the screen and then revise, seemingly, they'll say we're up 200,000 jobs. And if you've got three jobs, you're counted three times. Because if they called all three places, Kevin or I would be counted at all three places. So there's a difference between the two surveys. But in the last year, you take like
November. And by the way, that's one of the things that they try to adjust out of it with the adjusted numbers.
Right. Well, they do, like in Christmas,
though. That's why the adjusted numbers can be crap.
Well, yeah, that's why in, I don't know if it's as bad, Kevin, but again, when we first started the show, I was digging into the adjustment for December. I think if something like 300,000 or 400,000 people didn't get a job, it was considered negative or something. And the adjustment was huge in December back, you know, when you had more department stores and things. I imagine it's not as big now. But anyway, there's going to be a difference in these numbers, okay, just because of the way they're picked up. But I'm going to say, Kevin, if you added up, we had the one clunker month, but if you added up all the headline numbers, even minus the adjustment, you've got to be talking 2.5 million people being hired. And if you look at the household survey, it's 700,000 less. So we're talking about a 3 million person difference. Either both surveys suck, or whoever is in charge, whatever administration is there, they throw these numbers out there to the upside, and then somehow if it's bad, they hit you through the revisions, and nobody looks at the revisions. But if the numbers are anywhere near truthful on a yearly basis, it's a dramatic difference, isn't it?
I would say yes.
I don't know. I guess I'm never going to solve the problem, but
it is indicative of what's going on. Plus, we had a pretty hot. What was it, PPI yesterday?
Yeah.
So that was pretty hot. I'm sitting here going, well, duh. we've seen what got dumped into the economy back in October. So, of course, we're starting to see some things flare up there. This is a weird economic situation. I don't know. I mean, there's kind of an optimism built around the idea that we're going to deregulate, and we're going to, clean up some things. There's an optimism built around that might carry the day a little bit, but we have some fundamentally really bad stuff. What was the article we had? Where he was talking about a turd of an economy.
Yeah. Well, you look at some of the. Yesterday I was going through the CPI numbers and the. There's a guy at the. I mean, we go through the gross numbers, and I kind of run down the whole list and pick out the ones that I'm looking at. But a few days later, one of the guys in CNBC always writes a real nice summary type thing where they take the year over year and look at the ones that are the highest. And from memory, I don't have it in front of me. I think yesterday it was car insurance is what, 12.5% is higher. Was it vet bills are 12% higher? Car repairs are 12% higher. And what was the other one? Oh, care of the elderly, anything like that, is up like 11%. So, Kevin, do not have a dog, do not drive, and don't get old. Just saying.
Okay. If you behave like a big child, if I behave like a big baby, does that count as not getting old?
Probably not. But you look at these, I mean, we're talking 12% a year, and these are things that are fairly, I mean, you're not, we were talking. Who the hell was I talking to yesterday about it last night? And I said it's not the inflation. One of the guys who used to run the restaurant here that we go to a lot came back. He's retired, a real nice guy. known the guy for 50 years in the various restaurants down here in Chicago. And he's talking about inflation going to the store. And, you know, the eggs are high. Well, the eggs are really higher lately. I don't know. Is it bird flu? Kevin, something's wrong with the eggs. Are like doubled the last couple of weeks. Anyway, he's talking about eggs and this and that. How does a family of four deal with it? And I said, well, they're having trouble dealing with it. But the sneaky part of inflation is the stuff that you don't have to buy yet. They have no idea how high it's gotten, and you don't budget for it. And he kind of looked at me like I had two heads. I said, no, I mean, if all of a sudden your furnace goes out and you've got a memory of 10 years ago, and you say, gee, a furnace is $3,000, and it turns out it's 10, there's no way you budget for that. I mean, we've been talking about it with Nancy earlier in the week and stuff, how everybody absolutely has to have a house they can move in and think nothing's going to break for the first couple of years because they can't afford it. I mean, you know, the idea of a roof being $50,000, $60,000, $90,000. I mean, I never even dreamed it. So this is, or an emergency room visit or something, or if somebody getting in an accident and to repair a fender is like $1,000 instead of, you know, a couple hundred bucks. It's stuff you don't even know of until it happens to you. That's the real creeping danger, I think, is everybody's right at, not everybody, but a lot of people are right at the edge right now. That's why credit card bills are so high. I don't think, Kevin, it's because people go out and just spend like hell. Maybe a few do, but I think most credit card problems start with a medical expense. And I've read that.
A medical expense or an auto repair or, you can pick it out. It's what's next.
What are you seeing? I mean, your view of the world is a lot better than mine, and it's one area. The people that are, I don't think you ask your students how much they're making. I don't think you'd ever be that rude, but I suspect if you keep your ears open, you probably, what has been the, if I could ask, kind of a stupid question, in the various levels of people that you're teaching, you know, you got some entry level people that are trying to move up to the next level, you got some other people trying to move up to the next level, what would you say the average increase has been this year, last year, and the year before? Do you have a guess at each level?
I don't even have a feeling for it. I don't think it's substantial. It's still, as many openings as they have, and as much as people say they have a hard time hiring, they're not having a hard time keeping people.
Okay.
And the reason is, you know, nobody's out there in a bidding war for the for talent, and most of the job openings are lower end. So the people who are working in manufacturing and making good money, $25 an hour or more, those folks are they don't have a ton of options. Let's put it that way. I don't see a lot of people. I see some people, a little bit of movement, but I see, I don't see a lot. I think it's going to get interesting around here over the next couple of years. And the reason I say that is because in St. Joe County, we have an EV battery plant under construction. We have an Amazon Web Services data center under construction, a Microsoft data center about to start. And when those get built, and they get built kind of, off the beaten path a little bit, that pulls a crap ton of infrastructure out in that area, and all of a sudden you get some other business following. Just like when Amazon built the distribution center in Elkhart, that they've been slow to open, but nevertheless, when they built it, all of a sudden you had springing up in the area about six new, rapid fire, like six new warehouses and one and a, distribution centers of various kinds. Because once you get the infrastructure there, it's real easy for other people to piggyback onto it.
We're going to go to break here in a couple of minutes, but whichever you'd rather talk about first, we talked a lot about, the difference, Lou, yesterday with, what is profit, what is loss, what is going to happen with these professional teams in terms of valuations. Are the college teams really going to be a second NFL? Are they going to be competition? Can a... how much further can the colleges go, if any, before they blow their tax exempt status? We've asked more questions this week than I think we ever have on this show. And did Lou send you the one about the?
You get the Rosanna Dana quote. You sure ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
New Jersey.
What did you see the one? I think Lou sent me about the guy who got shot and how the news media is airbrushing this guy. I'm not going to go anywhere near where anybody deserves to get shot. But they airbrush him how. Yeah, he actually has a couple of lawsuits of selling stock right before a big announcement and stuff. I mean, and he had a DUI. But
well, there's a lot of justifying the shooting.
I'm not trying to do that. I'm just saying.
Even Elizabeth Warren was on a TV show doing that.
What'd she say?
You can only push people so far.
Oh, she's right about that. I mean,
well, she is, but you know what? She's getting goaded on, of course, by Joy Reid. So you know that's going to be a feeding frenzy of their point of view. Not really the point. There are times when it is and is not appropriate to say things like that.
I don't know how you,
when you're saying it to add some justification for the shooter, that's not appropriate.
How can you say it in such a way? Because I'm going to be honest with you, Kevin, and you and I have argued about it, and you've criticized rightfully a couple times when I've screwed it up. How do you describe the sentiment without justifying the action? Let's talk about that after break a little bit.
I have an answer for you on that. So, yeah, let's do that.
SP Futures up 20, NASDAQ Futures up 165. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at tom@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Ricky on the board, SP Futures. Up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 165. We're down yesterday. We got to come back today. We always got to go straight up. Dow Futures up 54, and that's what we're doing. I think we probably are. I put some money to work this week for people, so I'm in. You know, kind of like everybody else. I just wonder when it's going to end here, because we're going to talk to Carl about the budget numbers, and they look awful. Anyway, but nobody seems to care. That's a weird part of it. Bonds. Up 2 base points, 4.35. These guys have been remarkably steady in here. The Bund up 5 basis points, 2.24. Same thing with the Japanese, 1.04. Over in Europe, we got the DAX up 49.2%, FTSE up 10.1%, CAC around up 19.2. So bullish over there, but much more muted than us. Over in Asia, Nikkei didn't make it to 40,000. It's down 378, 39,470. Hang Seng down 425, that's 2%. 19,971, so they're blip over 20,000 so far lasted a day. Shanghai down 69, that's another 2%, 3,300. The Beijing stimulus packages, meaning pour money into the system, appear to fall short of expectations. Ricky, who are these expectators?
I have no idea.
We have no idea who these expectators are. Yesterday, the Dow was down 234, S&P down 32, NASDAQ down 130. I want to see who the expectators are on the Chinese stimulus package. I can only imagine what a room of those guys look like. Oil up 57 cents, 70.59, over 70, obviously. Brent up 56 cents, 73.97. Natural gas down 3 cents, 3.42. Gold, which got whack-whack yesterday, is getting whack-whack again today. Now 19.20, 26.90, was up to 27.50. Silver down 29 cents, 31.32. Foreign exchange, dollar is actually had a pretty good week. The pound is back under 105. I'm sorry, the euro dollar is back under 105, 104.99. And the British pound is 126.48. It made it back up to 127. It's come back down. Crypto up 310, 100,000, 252 in crypto. In Bitcoin and Trumpy, we trust thee. That's where we're going forward. Trump and Bitcoin. I bet more on Trump than I do on the Bitcoin, but. Ricky, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in beautiful and cold Chicago. 10 degrees right now with a high at 30. Increasing cloudiness and not as cold. Yeah, right. Tonight will be cloudy with the lowest 27 degrees. Let's go to Phoenix, Arizona. 49 degrees right now with a high at 68. Times of clouds and sun. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 44 degrees. Let's go to traffic in Chicago. Inbound Kennedy from Monroe, 16 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, we're looking at 30 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 17 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 15 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 18 minutes. Sports, NBA, the Hornets at Bulls play today at 7 p.m. And also Suns at Jazz at 8:30 p.m. NHL, yesterday the Blackhawks lose to the Islanders 4-5, but today we got the Senators facing the Hurricanes at 6 p.m. Lastly, NFL, yesterday the Rams beat the 49ers 12-6. This Sunday, December 15, we got Patriots at Cardinals at 3:25 p.m. Monday, December 16, we got Falcons at Raiders 7:30 p.m. and Bears at Vikings at 7 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Ricky, you left one out.
What did I leave out? Oh.
You left out Notre Dame 79, Connecticut 68 in women's basketball.
That was my mistake.
That was a fun game to be at.
Ricky says he doesn't watch women's soccer or women's basketball.
Well, this one was a true sellout. You know, sometimes they announce a sellout because the day before the game they dump all the leftover tickets onto the secondary market and let them handle it. The way that scam works is they'll declare a sellout. They'll give SeatGeek all their unsold tickets, and then and SeatGeek will pay them, you know, cheap. They'll give them a small amount of money for all of those seats, and then they'll sell them for what they can get for them because the sellout has been announced. They won't sell them all, but they'll sell enough of them to more than cover what they paid for all of the seats. So, that's part of the scam. That wasn't the case last night. Every seat in the joint was taken.
Kevin, if you find that you have to lie in selling tickets to a college game, what won't we lie about?
I agree. When they first started doing that, and this goes back a long time ago, when they first started having a relationship with a third-party ticket seller, I challenged the... I forget what his title was, some kind of associate or assistant or, whatever AD in charge of marketing. And he said, oh, no, that would be unethical. We'd never do that. Somewhere along the line, that changed. Probably when they changed from Vivid Seats to SeatGeek. It is definitely a scam.
Well, you know, it's the, let's just say our incoming president sometimes is fast and loose with the truth. But if you ask anybody who's a supporter, the first thing out of their mouth is, so what? So does everybody else. And you know what, Kevin, they're not wrong. That's the scary part of it.
I'm looking for an honest person to run for that office someday, but
yeah.
We'll see. I haven't gotten a lot of what I consider lies out of J.D. Vance, but we'll give him some time.
I'm going to say the last person I actually sort of believed when he said something might have been Jerry Ford. But I don't know if I was younger. I didn't know him as much. I didn't cover him as much as we cover the guys now. So I don't know.
Yeah. Well, he's got the Warren Commission part of him, though.
Yeah.
He did sign on to that.
Yeah, well, it's a... Anyway,
which has a lot of people wonder, always had a lot of people wonder.
All right, so educate me on this one. I think that, especially when you look at economic hardship, which I think I look at more than...
Wait, we didn't finish our topic from before the break.
That's I'm going to the same topic.
Oh, that's where you're going. Okay, fire away.
I'm saying I think I'm a little more sensitive to economic hardship when the rest of the people on the show are more sensitive in other areas. That's why we get together, because we can look at each of our strengths, at least in my opinion. And I can sense economic pressure hitting people and hitting a family, and you can, since I'm more of a behavioral economist than a, you know, let's predict next year's GDP, you economics is a social science. You can tell people's behavior by the economics, or you can predict it pretty accurately. Not the day, not the time, but you can sort of predict it. When people get pressured, they tend to get more, they're always going to get more desperate, especially if family members or people they care about are involved. That's just the way it is. I mean, if somebody refuses you treatment, maybe you can suck it up. But if somebody refuses your mother or your kid treatment, that's another problem. Somewhere along the way, you're gonna push people to the point where the actions they take are maybe not the actions you want them to take. Now, that's just behavioral science. It's not justification. And I don't know how you convey one without people hearing the other. That's where you and I sometimes clash, Kevin. It's not what people say, it's what people hear. Now, I don't think Elizabeth Warren, in her mind, thinks that anybody should be able to walk out, no matter what it is, and blast somebody. Yet, she's conveying...
Well, she says that. It's never justified. However... Well,
that's what I'm saying. What I'm saying. But if you did this to everybody all the time, you have to expect people to react somehow. Either breaking into the place and robbing the cash or something. I mean, it's when desperate times cause for desperate measures. I mean, I'm trying to find the answer here. I mean,
well, and I'll give you something. And Carl's on now, so Carl, you can feel free to jump in too if you want on this, because you've written a lot about, you know, when's it time to grab the pitch, you know, get the pitchforks and go. But you know, to my way of thinking, especially for a politician, for someone of a prominent position, you don't talk about them at the same time. You don't have to give it the yeah, but. You talk about situation, you know, you can talk about one side of the situation and leave the other for an appropriate time. And when you start equivocating like that, you're sending very mixed messages to your constituents. And some, you know, and that's messages you don't necessarily want to, you don't want to send. So the common sense side of communication is simply sometimes you just shut up.
Well, but I mean, let's take something a little simpler. I mean, I have I can stand to use a couple pounds myself, but I mean, I have several friends now that are on this drug, right?
Ozempic?
Yeah, and these guys, they don't make that much money, Kevin, and we're talking $1,000. And it's become, since that one lady from CNBC wrote that, I don't know how widespread the knowledge is, but if you listen to Stocks and Jacks, you would know that somebody was not criticized for an article that said if they sold it for $5 they'd make a profit. Now, if you see somebody in your family that saved up $20,000 after 15 years of hard work and now spent it on something for their health that should have cost them $500. On the rage-o-meter, mine goes up a little. No, I'm not going to grab a gun. Maybe that's why I don't have a gun. But I'm not going to grab a gun. But I do know that the rage-o-meter is continuing to inch up here, Kevin, for just about everybody. Now, everybody's got their own breaking point. Now, this kid's obviously, I think, is a little too low. But how do you describe the fact that people are getting pissed off, yet... And if we're not careful, it's going to head to this other direction. I'm not justifying. I'm just. Maybe I'm justifying the rage-o-meter a little bit, but there's no way on earth that my three buddies can sue these people. Good luck with that. The courts don't work for anybody of our size. I got news for you.
Well, they don't, and we also have an industry that we know lies.
Yeah.
You know, all the time. It's really funny. I was using a Merck case in class, and And it was really a project management case. So, you know, the class is a project management class. So just this week, it happens that the they had this Merck case in the as part of the we put a lot of industry certifications in our classes. So the Six Sigma Global Institute material got into this case, and they were talking about Merck rolling out, I forget which drug it was, and there were some project management mistakes. But the other thing is they were being driven by the wrong principles. They wanted to be first to market. And it was so funny because it's an older case, and they're talking about how anybody who criticized the product, they had a very organized discrediting campaign for them. And I thought, gee, that's not a standard playbook item for them, is it?
It seems to be.
That's exactly what we did with the COVID jabs.
Yeah.
So, you know, the same thing. It's been the playbook for a lot of years. So now you start to say, okay, if you're going to run your industry like that, yeah, you're going to be asking just the question that you are asking. I think Carl's more eloquent about it because he says, when are we going to pick up the pitchforks and guns and go after them? Because when nobody who has oversight responsibilities for them is going to do anything, then it's either nobody does anything or we all rise up and we go. Now, that I think is a separate conversation than the conversation we're having right after a shooting.
Well,
maybe it's a related conversation. There's a lot of ways that you can look at it, but you don't, you can't be in a position of power and justify a murder like that.
No, you can't. I don't know how do you justify, really not. I think what we're talking about, Kevin, is we're talking about laws or rules or morals that most of us, I think, believe we're going to live by. I mean, how can I do this? I'll go back to those that are old enough to remember Matt Dillon and Gunsmoke. The deal was, if somebody messed with your wife or you, you didn't have to go after him. All you had to do was walk into the sheriff's office and say, hey, this guy's messing with me. And guess what? Matt took care of it. There was the idea in society is when you put a society together, and this is what changed the people. If you look back at economic history, you look at why did the European people, why did a lot of people do better than, say, the Indians in America? Okay, well, the Indians in America didn't do as well because they didn't have domesticated animals is really one of the reasons. They didn't have cows. They didn't have, so there was no reason for them to live in a city. Let's say they still were in like the hunter gatherers. I'm not degrading anybody. I'm just saying the economics were different. I don't think they had chickens either. I don't think, Kevin. But I'm saying so. There's reasons for people. All of a sudden now we all got to live in one area because we have cows. We have chickens. We have some sort of farming. Those kinds of things. Well, if we're all going to live together, guess what? We better have a few rules of how people are going to behave because the guy's right next to me.
It's not Chief, come on now.
No, what I'm saying is that's how this all started. There's some morals. And then we say, okay, everybody can't be our own policeman. We're going to have people that do that for everybody. So that
right, but the problem is nobody goes to jail.
Okay, that's... Carl, I'm getting there. Give me a second. I know I'm stumbling. I'm saying, but now you reach the point where you walk down to Matt Dillon and he goes, I'm going to the bar. Screw you. I mean, now what? If somebody says, hey, these people are gouging us, and the gougers have paid off every one of the people who are supposed to be watching for us, now we got a problem, which is kind of where you're at, Carl. I mean, did I get there clumsily? Yes, but I got there, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's even more than that. Okay.
Well, sure it is, because money's involved.
Well, but we took 4% of the economy and turned it into 20% of the economy, and we got worse outcomes.
We got worse outcomes, without a doubt.
All right, now those are facts.
Stop for a second. We got worse outcomes generally in general care, but if all of a sudden you have a procedure, you can get something done today you couldn't dream of 15 years ago. So
this is absolutely true, but here's the other thing that goes along with this. when you look at the actual benefits, okay, versus the cost, all right, so you look at what's been invented in this arena, all right, and what benefits has it brought to humankind. And we're not talking about individual cases, we're talking about the whole.
Yep.
All right. There hasn't been a huge amount of benefit from on balance from so much of what's been done over the last 30, 40 years. That doesn't mean we can't detect things, doesn't mean we can't do things, we can do things. But then you have this other problem that comes up, which is that money has become the only thing that matters to people in a huge realm of industries. Okay, and in the medical complex, what makes this so difficult is that you have the gatekeeping. I'm going to pick on the American Medical Association in a big way here. The American Medical Association has essentially conspired with medical schools to both limit supplies of physicians. They have pushed mandatory licensing schemes. Now, you can say, you know, licensing is a great thing if you're a doctor, right? You don't want to have quacks running around all over the place. And, okay, fine. You probably would like to have some code compliance when your house is built so it doesn't burn down from, you know, electrical fires too. But the problem with this is now you take this and you make this a gatekeeping capability. And so now all of a sudden, to get an MD costs $400,000. And you say, but that guy's not a part of the problem. Well, wait a minute. He knowingly went into medicine, knowingly, with the full knowledge that he was going to have to screw people because he has to somehow pay that $400,000 back.
I'm gonna sort of disagree with the timing here.
Hold on, Milton Friedman, this is his first example.
What you just said is Milton Friedman's first example of how things shouldn't be. I'm talking 40 years ago, where the American, for those that don't know what Carl's talking about, the AMA, American Medical Association, which is essentially doctors, they were in charge of certifying new med schools for doctors. So, in other words, they got to control the supply, much as the city controls cab medallions back when you had cabs. And right. It was kind of a messed up thing, but I'm going to say in the last 15 years, the AMA has gotten their ass kicked by the corporate people. They're not even anywhere near the highest paid people in hospital anymore.
Oh, no, no. Oh, boy, are you wrong about that?
I don't think so.
Chief, do you know where the AMA makes basically all their money right now?
I'm talking about the individual doctors.
No, I'm talking about the American Medical Association.
Okay, but when you... You started out accusing the doctors themselves. The doctors right now are salaried schlumps at a hospital.
Correct. And oh, by the way, what the AMA has done is they became a monopoly provider of the coding system that Obamacare mandated every medical provider use.
They did the same thing that what Audrey's always talking about. The Realtor Association.
In the Realty Association.
Essentially sold right. out the realtors. But these guys now, are selling out the doctors.
Well, yeah. Now, here's the problem with this. This is against the law.
Well, sure.
Okay, it's been illegal for over 100 years to price fix and maintain or construct monopolies. It's a felony. You're supposed to go to prison for 10 years
Hence my example with Matt Dillon. It's a law. I don't enforce that law. See, I'm going to the Long Branch. That's where
right.
we're at.
Nobody goes to jail.
Right.
Okay, now you have the same thing, you know,
We don't even not go to jail. We don't even say it's wrong.
Well, Chief, it's even worse. Okay, the sugar industry in the 1950s and the 1960s paid the medical associations to say that saturated fats were bad for you. Now, why would a food group producer bribe, and it has now been proved that they did, a Medical Group to say that somebody else's product is poison.
Right? You don't even have to use that something maybe that people don't even know what you're talking about. All you got to do is see what happened in the 50s with butter and oleo.
Well, yeah. And oh, by the way,
butter's way better for you than oleo.
Well, and oh, by the way, what did McDonald's do in the 1980s, the early 1980s? They stopped frying their fries in tallow, actual grease from cows.
Lard, for lack of a better term.
Well, no. Lard's from pigs. Tallow's from cows, right? All right. And went to vegetable oils. Why? Because the doctors all said that if you ate steaks, it would clog your arteries and give you heart attacks. That was a lie. The study that was used to support this, the cholesterol hypothesis, that says that this stuff clogs up your arteries and kills you if you eat beef, okay, and pork and chicken, if you eat animal fats, that study was a cherry-picked set of countries deliberately designed to produce a result that then led to licensing statins and all kinds of other stuff, okay, and all kinds of dietary guidelines. What's the truth behind it? The truth is vegetable oils are cheaper.
Well, this is something we've had, and you know, it's near and dear to my heart, and I'm not changing the subject again. I'm just saying it crosses lines. You know what the absolute best streetcar system in the U.S., maybe the world? You'll never guess.
San Francisco?
No. Close.
Well.
Close.
Don't know.
L.A.?
Okay.
Believe it or not. They had a tremendous system of streetcars, and I believe they had their own lines. They weren't in traffic. They had segregated rail. General Motors produced a big study that said how inefficient they were versus buses. They tore them all up.
And it was a lie.
It was a total lie. And you could have got from one side of L.A. to the other side, and it wasn't as big back then, for like 20 cents or something, and it was and you got there pretty darn fast. And now you're stuck in traffic.
But see, here's the thing. The thing, Chief, is that when corruption is nothing new, okay? It's in the human experience. It's not a new thing at all. But we have now, what we've ended up with is a system where you have one side of the coin, which is the stuff that goes in your mouth. And you have to put things in your mouth in order to survive, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like it or not, we all have to eat. All right. So we have, on the one hand,
I'm not going to make a comment about the cone heads on the game.
Well, yeah, okay. but on the one hand, we have these people that have deliberately conspired with the medical group, because they did, to lie about the health effects of the things that go down your throat. All right? We have, if you go into a grocery store, and by the way, this is actually a HHS requirement for packaged formulas. I didn't know this. When I did some digging around, I found it, though. It is actually a requirement that packaged formulas be stuffed full of these processed vegetable oils.
Really? Kevin, are you still with us? What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm still with you. And so I was going to comment, because I think Carl made a really good point that corruption has been around forever. But what you're describing isn't that there's corruption in the system. Corruption is the system.
Right.
It's compromised at all levels. And as you go through all the places where you would need it to succeed, everybody's compromised. Even as we went through all the COVID nonsense, and there were doctors that knew damn well that stuff didn't work, that they knew what did work, but they got, not only did they get intimidated into going along, but they also went along. There's got to be some point where you say, I'm not doing this. If this is what I have to do to practice medicine, then I can't practice medicine. Are you guys familiar with the Gandhi's seven social sins?
I've heard of them, Kevin, but I couldn't give you any of them. But
two of them are germane to this discussion. One of them is commerce without morality.
Yep.
And the other one is politics without principle.
Yeah.
Okay. This is where we are, is we have commerce without morality. And
yeah.
It's not that it's violated here and there. It's that it's the violation is so widespread and collusive.
Well, and we just had an election, which is, I don't want to get in the two guys, but we essentially are selecting people to do this for us. And yet, for a long period of time, they have not. But now, while you're still here, Kevin, I want to run this one by you. Somebody in my class with George Stigler, Nobel Prize winner, doesn't make him a god. It just makes him I thought he was a terrific guy. But one day, somebody asked him, how do you stop corruption in Chicago? Is it possible to stop? And he goes, I can stop 90% of it tomorrow. And the guy goes, how the hell are you going to do that? And he says, well, look at the aldermen, for instance. They're making $15,000 a year from the city because everybody knows they're stealing. But then again, you don't want to give them more money because everybody knows they're stealing, that you're pissed off they're stealing. Because you can't have it both ways.
Right.
He goes, the customer, essentially the person paying them for their livelihood, is not the city, it's whoever they're getting the other stuff from. He goes, if you were to give, and he goes, take the mayor at the time was making like $40,000, and the head of General Motors, I'm saying, was making $300,000 or $400,000 or something. It wasn't millions like today, but maybe it was a million, I don't know, I doubt it. But he goes, City of Chicago has just as many employees, just as big a budget. I mean, what are you doing? He goes, if I paid the mayor $1.5 million a year, which is chump change considering the whole budget, and every year I put 80% of it in escrow, and only after a while does it leak out of escrow, and if he ever gets accused of any kind of corruption of any kind, he forfeits all the dough. He goes, you can't expect people to act in your best interest when they're being paid by other people. And that's what we have in Congress. I mean, everybody there thinks they should be making, they should be a big shot because they're very powerful. Yet their salary isn't there. There are very few people left like Adlai Stevens and Paul Simon that are happy to make their $75,000 and go back to their home in Southern Illinois and teach at Eastern Illinois University until they die.
But Chief, that's gone today.
I know what I'm saying, but how do you, you can't, it's very much, I don't want to get into it, but it's exactly the same as payment for order flow and people having free commissions.
You're
not the customer. Why do we think that we're the customer of Schumer or Pelosi or any of the Republican? We're not the customer. We're not giving them the money. These other people are.
Mm-hmm. Well, as I have pointed out repeatedly, and in the article that I put out, it's an expansion of a section in my book, okay, which goes all the way back to when Obamacare was first put together, and in the wake of the crash in 08. What I pointed out is that the only way you're going to stop this corruption is to actually enforce the law. The law says that the current structure that we have is felonious up and down the line. In other words, you cannot connect so-called insurance with the provision of the service on a direct basis and then have the amount that is paid for a thing governed by which company you contracted with for the insurance. Because the insurance company, although it's not actually insurance, it's essentially prepaid care, okay? That's what these things all are. So you have fraud in marketing, which is consumer fraud, and it is also business level fraud. You then have price fixing, which is very simple to understand. You pull into the gas station, there's no price posted on the pump. How much you pay for your gas depends on who your car insurance company is.
If you
tried to do that, Chief, you'd go to jail in 10 minutes.
I know that, but
okay. But here's the thing. So this makes it impossible for a person to know and to shop and to actually, for commerce and the entire premise of an open market, it makes it impossible for that to function. And that is not an accident. And every single physician, every single administrator of a hospital, every single pharmaceutical company, Right, all in on this, and it's illegal.
Kevin's going to have to referee this for a second. You know, 100%.
Just for a second, because I got to go.
All right, you know, 100%. You know, 100%, Carl, that I'm absolutely behind you. My point is, I'm on a different level of chessboard, maybe a lower level, but a different level. All that what you say is absolutely true. Nobody can argue with you about this stuff. You have Supreme Court stuff behind you.
Yeah.
My point is we are hiring a group of people through an election process to do this for us. And what I'm saying
and they
is
don't.
Okay, what I'm saying is we are so stupid as a congregation of people to not know the people that we're putting in these offices. Now, there's good people there, there's whatever. But the fact is they are getting paid way more by the side we're asking them to spank than we are paying them. And human nature is it's not going to happen. They're not going to get spanked. And they haven't been.
Right.
Well, we have a system that was designed for people to serve the country for a short period of time and then move on, go back to their lives. We have career politicians now, and so they do make their career as lucrative as they can.
Well, and if their career was always...
That is a case for term limits, whether it's the case for term limits or whether there's more for... You know, we can argue about that, and that's not where I want to go with this other than to say I'm agreeing with you, Tom. We have built a system that is absolutely built for corruption, the corruption that we all understand today.
Well, we never thought it'd get to the point where it's going to constantly cost people lives, like Carl keeps bringing up, and he's right.
Well, you know what? And this is even worse. In the official government data, the CDC has a database called Wonder that essentially has all of the reasons people die, and it's all based on those ICD codes that the AMA makes all their money having monopoly control over. Okay. But this allows you to quite trivially go in there and query this thing. And it's public facing.
Really?
Now they're delayed, okay, because like everything else the government does, right? Nobody ever gets any data in real time. I mean, we just got the MTS that, good God, I want to spend some time on that today.
Oh, yeah.
But if you go into that data and you dig into it, and then you do the mathematical work to take out the pull forward effect, because when the virus hit, it killed a bunch of very old and fragile people very fast. Okay? You can only die once. And in this country, approximately 3 million people a year have that happen. All right? I mean, that sounds like a horrific number. When you think about it, if there's 330 million Americans, people in the country,
Yeah.
1% of them approximately reach their terminal date and they die. Okay, it's a large number. But if you filter this out and you look at the actual causes...
Well, it's a lot of coffins.
It is. But if you look at this and you filter it out, you find a 9 sigma acceleration trend in certain causes of death that don't happen to younger people in general, which is why the change is so statistically significant. Cancer, for the most part, is a disease of the old, okay?
Well, not universally. There's a certain amount of childhood thing that's horrible, but it seems like the number's constant, sort of.
Well, that's right, and it has been for a long time, okay? So, I mean, it's been slightly downward because we've gotten better at treating leukemias, for example, and not having them whack the kid that the poor kid that gets it. Not hugely better. It still kills kids, but not very often. Okay, so in this 0 to 50 age bracket, there is a 9 sigma acceleration that has begun, and it happened exactly when the jabs started to roll out, and it has not inflected back downward, even though people have stopped taking them for the most part, and it continues to accelerate. Now, we saw something like this with a bad batch of polio vaccines that had a DNA sequence in them by accident. It's bad manufacturing. It took 30 years before that signal went away. And the pharmaceutical industry attempted to hide it. Everybody tried to hide it for a long time. It was called SV40. It was a contamination disaster, and it screwed a whole ton of people. Well, we've got the same crap going on right now, and it, and even though we've, for the most part, people stopped taking these things.
Carl, you do realize that their cub reporter, me, of Stocks and Jacks, has an anecdotal story that 100% agrees with you. The gentleman in the building here, Hispanic, and pretty religious, you know, pretty tight with his church, and his son plays soccer and all that stuff. He said he was talking to the priest about 6 months ago. He goes, I've never buried so many young people. Because you get one once in a while, but mostly, you know, it's the old people, unfortunately.
It's old people, yeah. Right.
He goes, but it seems like all the time now I'm burying somebody younger. Now, that's one parish, one city, but I think anecdotal evidence might agree with you.
Yeah, and well, I want to give you a hit and run, because this kind of piggybacks onto what Carl was just describing, you know, from a statistical standpoint. And this is, you may recall, well, we all know that the jabs are operating under emergency use authorization so that nobody could get sued. Now, you remember when they rolled out and said, okay, we have full approval for this this version of it called Comirnaty? And so while they're doing some new formulations of the jabs for the boosters, are they using the Comirnaty version? Or if you go in and get a booster, are you getting the EUA version?
Oh, no.
You're absolutely getting the EUA version.
You are.
Everybody should say to their doctors, why am I not getting the approved version?
Well, because you can't, because it hasn't, because the new one hasn't been approved. Oh, by the way, Joe Biden just extended those liability protections through 2029.
Unbelievable. Anyway, I got to go, you guys. I'll be listening.
Carol, but before I forget, you know what I was going to tell Kevin? I'm cleaning up my office here, and I find stuff that I can't believe I have, right? You know, I found the original book written by Joe Granville on technical analysis in 1980.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
But I'm gonna have to ship it to you or hell, because my calculus these days is a little weak. Or should I ship it to hell? Is your calculus still there or no?
It's there when I need it, but I don't know that I trust it to build a bridge.
You know what I found yesterday? How the hell I had this? I have a huge list of whatever year it was of all the people that Clinton pardoned.
Yeah. By the way, you know, Biden just did that yesterday,
yeah,
too. And among them, here's two cute ones. Among them was a guy that was actually busted spying for China.
Well, no, he didn't. These aren't pardons. These are commuted sentences.
Well, some of them were pardons, some are commuted sentences. Okay, so there's most of them were commutations. But among them was that, okay, which, I mean, you know, most people would sit up and say, what the? Right? I mean, he got caught. And then there was another one who's a Chinese national. It's not an American, but was caught in America with 47,000 child pornography images on his computer. Was actively trafficking in them. The cops stopped counting. This was in Texas, where he got caught. They actually stopped counting. So they don't know exactly how many were on there, but they stopped counting at 47,000. He pled guilty, and he was doing 96 months of hard prison time. So and he's not even an American citizen. What was he doing here, doing this stuff, right? That guy's sentence got commuted.
I was actually very happy when Rod Blagojevich's sentence got commuted, because I thought 14 years was way out of line.
Well, I think some people, I agree, all right, there's egregious stuff on both sides. But then again, you have situations where every now and then, I mean, you know, the jury system is not perfect, but every now and then you have the jury system that actually demonstrates why we have a jury system. Okay, like what just happened in New York. All right. And oh, by the way, for all those people, and then just yesterday, again, funny things happen when I'm traveling. I got the radio on sometimes. I actually hear these things in real time. Just yesterday, it comes out that the OIG, which is the internal investigative arm of the government.
I can only imagine what creatures are in that thing.
Oh, you've got, boy, oh boy. Anyway, they have admitted that there were 26, at least, okay, this is the number they've admitted to, 26 paid confidential informants to the FBI. All right. Now, if you're doing that and they send you to do something, they pay you. But in all cases, the way you become one of these guys is that you're essentially a paid snitch, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's what they are. Okay. 26 of those people.
All you have to do is watch Chicago PD and you see how that works.
Right. 26 of those people were involved in January 6th, the riot.
Really?
They've admitted. Now, the FBI said, no, that didn't happen. Well, they lied. 26 of them were involved. Now, here's the thing. There are over 1,000 Americans who showed up there, entered a restricted area. There is plenty of video showing that in many cases they were actually waved into the building. All right. Now, you would think that that's an invitation. That's not trespassing. At the point that you were actually waved into the building by a uniformed police officer, okay, you've been granted permission to enter this restricted space. Well, guess what? The government said no, and they have charged these people, prosecuted them for felonies, and thrown a whole bunch of them in prison. There's over 1,000 people that have been charged and convicted on this. Not one of those 26 confidential informants has been charged. Not one.
We need a change. I just don't trust
Chief,
any of the people.
Let me tell you something. I've said this publicly, and I'll say it again. I'll say it on the air. I do not care how many people decide they've had enough of this, and that is going to be the end of the line. And the kind of thing that happened in New York starts happening to anyone involved in the federal government, in the medical industry. I don't care. I'll start caring when all 26 of those people, by the way, the IG's office said essentially all of them did commit the same crimes, because entered the building. They did the same things. When we see these crimes prosecuted,
you're not going to see them prosecuted. That's our
then
point.
Then Chief, that's fine. Then if people get mad enough that they say, we're going to play Mexican drug gang justice on the people that are doing wrong, I'm all right.
All right, let me back up here. I read your stuff. I read it. It makes
Chief,
sense. I'm saying, what is it about human nature that you look at this stuff, you get deeper into it than most people, and the problem is the deeper you get, the more pissed off you get. Correct?
Yeah.
do I have a pretty good read of you? Because the more I dig. The more I'm pissed off I get to. But now, here's a phenomenon. I'll just tell you kind of what happened, and you explain to me what it is about human nature. We don't like... Remember the movie... God, please don't forsake me, oh my darling. The hell's the name of the movie? Gary Cooper and... who was the most beautiful girl ever? What was her name? The one who married the prince. Oh, God.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking about? High Noon.
Oh yeah, okay.
He puts this notorious bad guy in jail, and all of a sudden the town is not, the saloons aren't as full, everything's not as full. People are pissed off at him because he did, and when the guy comes back to town to get off the train to kill him with all of his buddies, he couldn't get a posse. Nobody'd help him out.
Yeah.
Let me just go a little further. I know I'm wandering, but there was a guy in our industry that you remember the name. He ended up becoming governor of New York, Elliot Spitzer.
Right.
Now, when Elliot Spitzer was, whatever job he had, I don't know what the hell he was, and everybody in the CBOE floor, Chicago Board Options Exchange, unbeknownst to most people, in those days, something like 40 to 60% on any given day, virtually all the stock traded on New York Stock Exchange came from the CBO floor. And everybody had a specialist that they had to deal with. If you traded Holiday Inn, there was a Holiday Inn specialist. Traded IBM, there was an IBM. And some of these guys obeyed all the rules, did the job right. They were little fiefdoms. Some guys didn't pay any attention to any of the rules. $10,000 would be offered at an eighth. You go try to buy it, trades ahead, filled at a quarter.
meaning the specialist bought it at an eighth and sold it to you at a quarter, which he's not supposed to do, right?
Right, but he did.
But he did. But the New York Stock Exchange, no enforcement whatsoever because it was such a good boy, good old boy network. Most of the good old boys were really good old boys. A few of them were bad old boys, and the good old boys couldn't do anything about it, right? The usual crap. So right. Elliot Spitzer lands this job in New York someplace. He starts going after these guys. He was, to a certain extent, he could have been our generation's Roosevelt. Now, I'm not going to compare him, but I'm saying he was a guy that came from that ilk, yet had a moral fiber and knew where all the skeletons were buried. He might have been the guy that could do what you and I think needs to have happen. He didn't get within 100 miles of a job, did he? A real job?
No, because
everybody laid wait for him. People, when he got indicted, I'm sitting. Imagine that, me sitting at the bar at the health club. So I worked out first, and there's about eight guys sitting there, and all these guys had some dough. They were traders on the floor, and I knew all of them, right? And I know all these people, Carl. When you're in a room of 2,000 people, you know people. And I go, you guys, they're all cheering. The guy got indicted, and I said, you know, you guys traded on the CBOE floor. He's the only person who ever went after some of the guys you complain about every day in New York Stock Exchange. But he had nobody. We don't like anybody. It's like you don't like Matt Dillon, but you don't like law either. You know, So I said to these guys, I go, you know, they caught him in a wiretap. Yeah, he was bringing some broad over, you know, some girl over the, you know. I said, okay, now let me get this straight. His family has all kinds of money, which they did do, and so does he. He just happens to be governor. He was taking money, $10,000, $15,000 out of his own bank account. And under the guise that they thought he was being bribed and they're doing this for their own good, his own good, they get a wiretap on him.
Right.
And they go, really? And I said, say you friend. One of the guys' name was Joe. I said, Joe, I know you got a beautiful house. I know you like to go to Vegas once in a while. I said, suppose your wife wants to paint the house. And now, what's a house like yours to be painted top to bottom? I'm going to say 20 grand. He goes, it's probably a little more. I said, okay, so you have no qualms about getting that cash and paying the painter in cash, do you? That's a while ago before you had problems with that. Well, no. I said, you go to Vegas a few times a year. A guy like you, a big swinging bleep, you're going to take 7-8 grand with you every time, aren't you? Oh, maybe a little more. I said, okay, I'm going to put a wiretap on your house to protect you. Well, how would you do that? I said, well, duh. Duh. Why can you do it to this guy and not to you? Well, you know, I didn't like doing it. They didn't know he did anything.
Yeah.
If Solomon showed up, if Matt Dillon and Solomon got together and they cloned him into one person, showed up, would anybody vote for him?
Yeah, well, there's the problem, right? But, I mean, here's the thing is, you have, right now, as things stand, when you look at the data, you know, and the MTS just came out, and, yeah, you know, you managed to scoop me on the list only because I was shushing down a Wolf Creek.
I only scoop you by about 5 hours, but anytime I scoop you, I can let you know.
You did, but you scooped me, okay? Yeah. But you did it because I was shushing down some glorious
and you survived.
White stuff. And I had an absolutely fantastic time along
with
my daughter.
Hey, would you mind if we left that topic for after the break? I want your.
Yeah.
I spent a long time yesterday with Lou.
Well, on top of that, I this way with the break, I get to refill my espresso because I'm sitting in a hotel right now.
Well, there you go. With all your all your appendages in one piece.
Yeah, everything is still attached as it was.
And you're done skiing?
I am on my way back home. Yes.
Okay. I want you to comment a little bit on where we're all going with the on this whole sports thing. Wherever you want to start, I have all kinds of little pinpricks into this. And when are we going to lose our tax exempt status? When is the college sports going to be an absolute competitor to the pro sports that maybe they're not worth as much as they think they are?
I don't know. I don't know, man. It depends on the program. The craziness that goes on at UT. Ooh,
well, that's what I'm talking about. We're talking about. When does UT? When does the state say we want our taxes for this stadium? Because,
well, yeah.
And I said yesterday, and I'll ask you, if I was going to went into a real high-end master's degree class right now, MBA, the first question I would put up, I'm going to show my age, I'm on a blackboard, I'm going to say, your first assignment, define profit.
Right.
I don't know. I have some ideas how I would do it. It's not the way we do it today, is it?
Well, you know, there are some programs that are just masters of it, and then there are some that just don't do such as good a job.
No, I'm talking about what does it mean?
Absolutely. And oh, by the way, don't we have the same problem in the medical industry with so-called nonprofit hospitals?
Yeah. You look at the Chicago. One of my buddies in John Flanagan was talking about it a little bit, but one of my attorney buddies that I see a lot, he's talking about how much money, like everybody looks at Chicago's, you know, to a certain extent has fallen apart. Now what could you attract all kinds of new businesses to Chicago? And now the first thing out of most people's minds that are somewhat intelligent, I say, well, we have an incredible basis here of Northwestern University, Chicago, Rush, Loyola. We have serious research hospitals here. Now, that is what's driving the incredible growth of Boston, basically, right?
Boston Scientific, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, yeah. Could Chicago be the next Boston and those kinds of things? Could Northwestern double? Yeah, but wait a minute. If Northwestern buys 5 other buildings or 10 other buildings that are paying taxes, now they don't pay any taxes.
Right.
Now,
and this is a backwards problem, isn't
yeah.
it?
And now all of a sudden, what would you even guess the head of Northwestern makes a year? I'm going to say 8 figures minimum. And what is the overhead? What is the bloat in that place? I'm going to say if you were to talk about, I know I'm skipping companies here, but it's the same issue. If I was going to define profit today, Carl, for like Commonwealth Edison, it has nothing to do with how much the schlump investors make. You're the part that goes over the fence last. Nobody cares about you. I mean, and you have no control. I mean, we were probably better off when Rockefeller and Vanderbilt, most places, ran plays. At least it was their dime. I'm going to say if you were to do a study on every employee of the top 500 that is making over a competitive wage, I'm going to throw that difference into the profit column. Is managerial?
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, yeah, and you know what? That would be a reasonable way to approach it too. I think
this whole managerial class, Eric always talked about when he was on. We got to get him back in. This whole managerial class that is really the thing nobody ever talks about. They're not owners. They're not this. They're not that. They control the boards and the place and think they're a totally different class of people. You know, the board that can give Tesla, what's his name, Musk, a $56 billion bonus without paying dividend one. That's a whole different definition of the world than when you
and I got in Boston now, and twice, by the way, in the Chancery Court, and now, you know, of course, he's all pissed off and moved his incorporation out of Delaware over this, which I think is quite an interesting situation, because the whole reason that Delaware is so popular has nothing to do with the tax situation. It has to do with the fact that the law is so well settled that you, when going in, you pretty much know how the game's going to play. That's the reason it's popular. And it's why essentially all of your large multinational corporations that's where their corporate certificates out of.
But you're younger people, and I'm not going to take a shot at Ricky here, but the younger people, it's been like this for so long. You and I, Carl, when a corporation was given all these essentially benefits, right, over right. individual people, you can't go after individuals unless there's absolute fraud, those kinds of things. There's dramatic advantages to being a corporation. As a matter of fact, it was probably a tremendous invention by somebody, maybe one of the best inventions ever. Yet, the whole idea is it's supposed to be, once you go out for public investment and those kinds of things, you're supposed to be controlled by essentially an independent board. Yet, if you walked around to, I'll say libraries and coffee shops and no saloons, Carl, and interviewed people, do you think anybody now thinks that? What do you mean? It's his company. The board. What difference would it make that he has a board? He never should have gone out for public money if that's the way he felt. You know, you can't have it both ways in my world.
Right. Now, well, yeah.
But and everybody else is, well, what are you talking about? Why should he pay attention to those idiots? Duh. I mean, they would think I have four heads if I said that.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, if we're going to have these corporations with no essentially governor on them, for lack of a better term, do we really going to give them all these advantages? Different tax rates and everything else?
Yeah, you know, this is, but this is all part of the same thing, right? So remember, you have heard of Gresham's Law, right? Bad money drives out good.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, it applies across the board. And you know, this is the perversion that we are now in. And it is, to a large degree, you know, Trump is, you know, he's filling his cabinet out. He's making all kinds of, you know, of claims. You know, we're going to drain the swamp. We got Dogie. We got this and that, the other thing. And I went after Vivek yesterday on X. And I said, if you do not deal with the actual cause of the problem, where it really resides, from the standpoint of the government deficit. And by the way, it's in one place. If you don't stop that, none of the rest matters. This whole thing's a stage show. That's all it is.
Am I wrong? I'm going to dash to break here. Am I wrong in my criticism of both parties? The criticism of the Democrats regarding health care is they've essentially tried to fix it and bleeped it up. The Republicans have totally ignored it. Is that a fair assumption?
No, it's more perverse than that. The Democrats have the Democrats are full of magical thinking. Okay, in the wake of this CEO getting shot, their answer is if we had the public option in Medicare for all, then this kind of problem wouldn't exist. Okay, now if that does, who pays for it does nothing to address cost.
I don't want to get into it. What I'm saying is, the Democrats come up with ideas, most of which are kind of crummy. Some they've actually got through.
Most of which don't pencil at a 2+2=4 level.
I'm saying, but the Republicans.
That's a fraud. That's fraud, Chief.
I get it, but the Republicans during the Bush years and the Trump years have totally ignored it, except bitching at the Democrats.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm simply saying that fraud's fraud, and by the way, active fraud is worse than passive. In other words, let's ignore it.
But they're not, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. I guess where I'm going with this.
Oh well, they're all making money off of it, so they don't care. All right. I mean, who's the biggest lobbyist? Entities. What industry are they connected to? Duh. Okay.
You know what it used to be? Going back on the lobby stuff. No, we'll hit for break.
No.
I think way back in the day, it was the Boeings, the Lockheeds, those guys. It was a defense.
Oh, well, defense, yeah. But I mean, it's been medical forever.
You know what, up until 2007, who it was?
Huh.
Fannie and Freddie.
Oh, yeah. And Raines and all those crooks.
Yeah. S&P futures up 23, NASDAQ futures up 186. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Here, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Blown up pick, Stocks and Jocks. Sometime out, Ricky on the board. S&P Futures up 23. NASDAQ Futures up 185, which is pretty much what we were down yesterday. A mirror image flip. So there you go. We can't be down more than a couple days in a row. I mean, and Trumpy, we trust thee. We're going to go up every day. Over in Europe, and let's hope it works out that way. DAX down 21 cents. I guess we can call that one flat. Boy, a snorer day over here. FTSE up a buck. Call that flat. CAC around up 9. We'll give that a 0.1%. Over in Asia, these guys have been up all week, but not today. Whack, whack, whack. Nikkei down 378. That's a full 1%. Going the other way of 40,000, 39,470. Hang Seng down 425. That's a full 2%. Back under 20,000. That only lasted a day. Shanghai down 69. That's another 2%. 33.91. This is all funny money. Beijing stimulus pledges appear to fall short of expectations. Are we going to call Carl an expectator of China stimulus platforms? I don't know. I don't know. There's got to be somebody who's in that job. Dow yesterday down 234, S&P down 32, NASDAQ down 132, so kind of a flip on today. Oil back over 70 bucks, but not by much. 70.39, Brent up 38 cents, 73.79, natural gas down 3 cents, 342. But it is mid-threes, which means, you know, people think we're going to have a reasonably chilly winter. It sure has been so far the last couple of weeks. RBOB unchanged at 199. Gold, which got whacked yesterday, whacking again here, even though it is set for still a weekly gain. It's down another 19 bucks, 26.90. Silver down 35 cents, 31.26. Copper down a penny, 4.23. Foreign exchange. Dollar continues to be strong. The euro was down under 105 last time we checked an hour ago, but it's 105.12. It came back a little bit. British pound is 126.5. It was over 127. Japanese yen's pushing 153. Again, you got to look at that the other way. It's a 153 yen to the dollar, not the other. So it's you got to flip your mind upside down when you talk about the yen. Bitcoin up 186, 100,000, 128. In Bitcoin and Trumpy, we trust thee. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 a.m. here in Chicago. 11 degrees right now with a high of 30. Increasing cloudiness and not as cold. Tonight will be cloudy with a low of 27 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 47 degrees right now with a high of 68. Signs of clouds and sun. Tonight will be mainly clear with a low of 44 degrees. Traffic in Chicago. Ema Kennedy from Monroe's 30 minutes. What? Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 43 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 21 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 32 minutes. Let's go to sports, NBA. Today we have the Hornets playing the Chicago Bulls at 7 p.m. And we have Phoenix Suns playing at Utah Jazz at 8:30 p.m., my bad. NHL yesterday, the Blackhawks lose to the Islanders 4-5. And today we have Senators facing the Hurricanes at 6 p.m. Lastly, NFL yesterday, the Rams beat the 49ers 12-6. This Sunday, December 15, we have the Patriots playing at Cardinals 3:25 p.m. And this Monday, December 16, we got Falcons at Raiders 7:30 p.m. and Bears at Vikings 7 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
Thank God there's a second game so we don't have to watch the Bears.
Yeah, Jesus. No, right?
Hey, Carl, what is you mentioned, is Tennessee, are you guys hosting?
No, you want to talk about corruption. Okay, so the game's at Ohio State, okay, and I think
that's not that long of a drive, is it?
Well, no, and by the way, the derogatory nickname that the Vols folks have, including myself, because I'm kind of I'm an adopted Vol, have for that stadium is a toilet bowl.
God, well.
Well,
not the big horseshoe.
Here's the interesting thing about this. Apparently, so like the official reservation, and this is actually fairly common.
But what time of the day are you guys?
We're Eastern.
No. I mean, you got the 1-3 or evening game on the Saturday?
Oh no, I think it's the evening game.
Okay.
So it's a night game and away.
Okay.
Okay. I'd have to look. All this happens while I'm traveling, right? The crazy. But the way these brackets get set at the playoff level is not exactly a democratic process and not exactly a statistically defensible one either.
I think they're going to change it after this year the way it turned out.
Well, it's the same thing with the rankings, right? You know, I mean, you beat somebody, you move up; you lose, you move down. But exactly how many slots you move up and move down and how this all happens is, you know, it's kind of smoky backroom survey. Well,
but it gets screwed up by the top four, two people.
Chief, it's as valid as the CPI, okay? I mean, when you get down to it. All right, there's so much knob twisting that's going on in the middle of this thing that,
the formula is screwed to start with because the four people who get the bye are the four highest ranking conference champions, and nobody ever expected Boise State and Arizona State to be ranked higher than somebody in the SEC or Clemson's the one that screwed it all up by winning, right?
There's all kinds of. I mean, this is just like kind of stupid for us. Well,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but you got to back up a second. It used to be. This is how things evolve. I mean, and you're the person who's always on how things evolve. the NCAA, which used to have some power over football, now I don't think they have any, but for you to have a conference championship, that extra game you got to play, because these kids are supposed to be students, so an extra game's a big deal if you're going to make them play, make them practice longer, all that other kind of stuff. The only way you could have a championship game was if your conference was big enough to have two divisions.
Right.
East and West, North and South. North and South. One or the other. So the Big Ten had it, and a few other places had it. I think you had to have more than eight teams at least. Was it more than 10? Anyway, so now all of a sudden, I looked at the standings. I didn't know this, Carl. I mean, I'm behind the eight ball like most people. I looked 2 weeks ago at the Big Ten standing, looking East and West, and I'm going, there is no East and West.
Right.
What happened to East and West? Well, now it's just one and two playing each other. Maybe again. They might have played the week before, which makes no sense. So why Clemson gets to come out of that conference as the winner when they had three losses or they had is crazy.
The entire structure of how this happens is, you know, it's a mess, right? But, you know, this is, and now you have, there's all kinds of intrigue going on with the transfer portal right now in the Vols.
Well, you got to leave before the game.
Right, right. So, I mean, there's all kinds of games, you know, going on there, and there's a lot of people.
By the way, since you brought it up, how many people from Tennessee are in the portal?
Quite a few.
Really?
There's,
do any of them play?
Well, there's like, just in the last few days, there's been, you know, this spate of announcements of, you know, so-and-so has entered the portal, and so-and-so has entered the portal, and it's like, okay, so basically what we have here is we now have the game playing with the whole NIM thing that went on, okay? Now the game's afoot, right? Because, hey, guess what? All of a sudden I can try to capitalize on this, you know, if I'm a football player, right?
Well, not I'm getting like George Stigler. Whenever he'd start talking, he'd remember something he should have said beforehand. And I'd say, if I ever get like that, please shoot me. But just to remind the listeners, Tennessee, the Irish, whoever it is that does not have a bye, if they make it to the final game, you're talking four more games against serious competition after a 12-game season, after maybe a conference championship. So if you start losing 10 people off your roster because they're going somewhere else,
that's a problem.
That's a big problem. That's a big problem.
Yeah, and so, I mean, well, and even if they are people that normally, I mean, their biggest contribution normally is they warm benches, right?
And practice against people and stuff, yeah.
But guess what? One of your guys might get hurt.
I think you can count on it with four games.
Well, I'm just saying, guys get hurt, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, that guy that normally warms the bench should be able to get in there and catch a ball.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, there's, this is kind of the, you know, there's a yin and a yang going on here. But it's just,
we're adding games and subtracting people.
Yes, basically. So, yeah, your roster is
getting thinned out. Does that make any sense?
Well, the roster's getting thinned out. That's not good for your odds, right? Because, like I said, people get hurt, right?
Well, you guys are the, you ever been to the Ohio State?
No, I have not.
It is, you got to go. You got to go once. It is unreal. First of all, you guys are all going to be in jail. Because in the parking lot, you can drink all you want, but you can't have an open alcoholic container.
Oh no, we're used to this.
Oh really? Because in Notre Dame, you can drink the beer.
No,
right
we're used to this. So the red Solo cups are very popular.
There's got to be a million of them at the Horseshoe.
I'm just saying, red Solo cups are very popular things. I mean, this is a, you know, I mean, we supposedly there's, you know, none of those terrible things go on. There might be some smokers running in the back of those trucks, but there's absolutely no alcohol. Yeah, right. Okay.
But I mean, you go to tailgate at South Bend or Florida. I mean, the open booze is on tables, and everybody's drinking out of the can of a bottle of beer. But you know, the weird part of in Ohio, everybody pays attention. Everybody obeys it. You don't see somebody drinking a Miller Lite out of a can.
This is going to be a very interesting situation just across the board because, I mean, there's the screaming that has come out of the fan base that we got screwed because we didn't get the game at Neyland.
What if you were Miami or Alabama? They're really sniveling. Miami,
you know,
more
what?
So than Miami, more so than Alabama.
Here's the thing, though. And you know, the there will be Vols people. I'll probably get slammed for this on X after the show's over. I'm sure the thread will blow up. To some degree, we deserve it that, you know, that we didn't get it, because we did lose a couple of critical games, okay, including, and by the way, we lost them away, which does not portend well for playing in Ohio, all right? But it, we, you know, I mean, it is what it is on the record. We lost a couple that, and they weren't close, all right? I mean, they were, watching the game, I'm like, you just did what?
You're down a notch, just like the Irish are, because of Arizona State. I mean, well, everybody dropped a notch.
We're down a notch because when we had to be able to play and we weren't at home, and we had to be able to actually hit receivers with thrown footballs.
Yeah, you got to.
Okay. We did not do that.
But see, okay. Now, a guy like you might think that this is the Vols against the Ohio State football team. You would be wrong. If you were in the stadium there, the song they sing is not. It's the Ohio State song, the state song, not the song.
No, I understand that.
They will be tearing up. Ohioans love their state more so than people in Illinois or any other state. When they sing that, there's grown men with tears running out of their eyes. It's serious.
I know.
All right, we can't push it off any longer. What's going on with this budget, for God's sake?
Okay.
So, and Trump's going to cut taxes.
Well, okay. And by the way, all right, so the MTS comes out. If you remember
remember we're talking about monthly treasury statement,
which is essentially a check register. Right? It's not down to the individual check, but if you go, if you use Quicken and you go into Quicken, you say, "Give me all the money that got spent by category." That's essentially what it is. Okay.
Yep.
So, you know, so it's a cash flow statement.
But finish what you're saying. But all right. Then you also have to answer it. Is it really all the money? Because the debt seems to be going up faster than the MTS tells you it should be.
Well, it is at the time it goes out. Okay, so this is where some of the people try to make mealy mouth excuses for what you see. So at the end of every fiscal year, every president tries to make the deficit look a little bit better than it. I mean, they'd all like it to look better than it really is, right? So if you're
mean every president, doesn't matter who you are.
I don't care who it is, and right. I do mean every president has done this. It happens every single time, every year, without fail, and it doesn't matter who the Treasury Secretary is. They all do it, and by the way, it's actually them that, you know, but that person works at the pleasure of the president, right?
Right.
So every year at the end of the fiscal, they...
Which is September 30th, make sure we say that.
September 30th, if you are owed money by the federal government, you're going to get it on the 1st or 2nd of October. Okay, yep. That's just the way it is. That's just the way it is. Why? Because it's a cash flow statement, and therefore...
But for those that don't know, Connie, I'm sorry, but everybody needs to know that there's two ways you can do your accounting. If you're an attorney or a dentist or something, you can either accrue stuff or cash. Now, in our business, everything has to be accrued. If we owe somebody something, we have to say that expense happened in this month.
And Chief, I don't know if the limits have changed, but the rule used to be on businesses... that for tax purposes, you could not run cash accounting once you got to $5 million in revenue.
Well, and let's put it this way. If you're being regulated by FINRA and the National Futures Association, you never can do cash basis.
Well, who's under $5 million in that business anyway, right? Well, of flows, right? Like nobody, right? But we actually ran into this where...
lot of small brokerage firms are under $5 million.
Well, okay. Yeah. But I started as a tiny business and got to be a considerably larger one, right, as a C corporation. We actually ran into those, you know, where we had to transition, which is a five-alarm pain in the butt because, you know, you have to make sure that it's right, and it's actually fairly difficult. But, from a tax perspective, they want it that way, and I understand the reason for it. From an operational perspective, cash is cash, and if you don't have any and payrolls due, you got problems. So... The thing is, though, is that the MTS tells you where that is. So there is some time shifting that goes on for that reason, because obviously money spent, if it's more than you take into taxes, makes the deficit look bigger. So October is usually a month that has an outsized contribution, if you will, to the Red Ink, and because they, you know, if they owe you money and they were supposed to pay you on the 29th or 30th, you're probably going to get it on the 1st or 2nd.
Is there an estimated tax payment that comes in October, or no? Or is that September? I'm losing.
No, that's September.
Okay, so there's no IRS number that fucks up, screws up to you.
And then the other one is January, okay, right, which is also when the 1120s come in from the corporations. So most corporate, it depends on when your fiscal is, but for those that are on calendar years, the 1120s come in January. So January is usually a positive month because you have taxes coming in, and of course April is a positive month, right? And then you have the September, you have incoming contributions on the estimateds. So you have those months during the year when that happens. But last month there was an utterly enormous negative side entry that came in on the MTS. All of it in CMS. Okay, it enormous, absolutely enormous increase. Now, last month, the two month total from last year was $291 billion. CMS is Medicare and Medicaid, for those people who are unaware. That's both programs. Okay, Medicare, of course, is offset to some extent by a tax because you have your, that's part of your FICA, right? Is that 2.9% that's the Medicare piece. So
plus Medicare is somewhat the pricing in that they get pretty good prices from people. So there's some intelligence to the Medicare side.
Well, except on the Medicaid side, it's a pure gift.
Yeah, okay,
it's a pure entitlement because there's nothing. And on top of that, it's even worse than that because that's not all of it. The states are on the hook for part of it as well. So the number there on the Medicaid side is only about half of the total. The rest has to be picked up by the states. So anyway, last fiscal year, the 2 month total for that division was $291 billion. This year, the 2 months, $434.5 billion. It's a 49% increase. Now, people made excuses for last month and said it was time. There was a lot of time shifting. Okay, that the government was basically trying to decrease the view of the deficit, but they got paid now. Well, okay, what's the excuse this month? Well, I had a guy that sent me.
Yeah, if it happens the third month, we're really in trouble.
Well, there was a guy that sent me an email and says, well, that has to do with when the first falls, if it falls on a weekend, right? And I'm like, you're right on the calendar.
A little bit, not that amount. It can't be that amount.
You're right on the calendar. However, the bottom line here is that a 49% increase on an annualized basis across 2 months, when I don't have the book diddling because we have an election coming up, okay, which of course would be a reason to try to make the deficit look better, right? I mean, duh. No one wants to run on, oh, by the way, I'm detonating the federal budget.
Right.
Right. So, I mean, if there's normal book diddling that goes on in an election year, you'd expect there might be a little bit more of it. And people raise that as an issue. But this is not here at this point. The problem is we only have about 2% of that CMS funding that over the last month came in tax receipts. So now, if you recall, when I talked about the annualized one, CMS's primary problem and the reason that this has to be fixed structurally on the cost side, you cannot fix it with taxes, you cannot fix it with policy at the government side. You have to go after the providers. You have to put people in jail if they won't cut it out. The only thing that ever stops people from breaking laws is the fear of punishment. And if you cannot get that fear of punishment from the government doing their job and enforcing the law, then unfortunately, that fear of the punishment is going to have to come from street justice, or you're not going to get it at all. And those are the only two choices. And the government needs to wise up on this and cut this crap out.
When you talk about, we went through this earlier with Kevin. When you say the government, you're talking about people that are getting paid by these people.
Chief, I understand the problem, okay? And I know you do. I'm not disagreeing with you on that. What I am pointing out is that if this continues through the fiscal year, that what we have going on right now, And by the way, the couple hundred billion, close to $500 billion that got dumped into the economy by Biden in an attempt to get Harris elected in October, okay, in that deficit, that is money that cannot be taken back out. And by the way, the inflationary impact of that is going to start to...
What you're saying is that caused the Federal Reserve to go back to a 5.1% increase in the money supply. And I'm not disagreeing with you, but now we have...
Wait a minute.
Okay, but what's the solution? The solution now is we have a gentleman coming in, and again, I hope he does one hell of a better job than he does last time. I think he's a lot smarter. He's got better... All those things. So I'm not anti-Trump. Yep. But my point is, he has convinced the population, 90% of the population that's susceptible to stuff like this, unfortunately, he's convinced the population that if he throws out the migrants and throws out half the people in Washington, this is going to cover the deficit. Well, you're saying that's such BS, it's scary.
Yes, it's absolute garbage. If he does not, on his first day, either issue letters of mark and reprisal to the American people and say, everybody that violates these laws when it comes to price fixing, no transparency, screwing your grandma on the procedure that she needs, whatever. Sorry, here's a letter of mark and reprisal. Bring me a stack of heads. We're going to have train cars. We're going to do Aztec. We're going to do Aztec style stacks. And or the other alternative is, if you do this stuff, you're going to jail.
You got to explain exactly what you're going after. You have to give everybody fair warning.
Yep.
It's like if you're a mayor of the city of Chicago. I know an awful lot of people out there have gotten blackened out windshields way worse than the law allows you. I'm going to give you 3 months to go back to the place and get legal windshields.
And if not,
it's a cause for pullover. And by the way, if we can't see you, there's going to be a second squad, and everybody's going to have to exit the vehicle because nobody's going to go up to...
We're going to play felony stop. Yep.
And by the way, it's an automatic search, or maybe you don't have to do that. But you got to give people fair warning. You got to do it in a way that makes some sense.
But the problem here, Chief, is that if this is not stopped, okay, this goes on, now we've got a 7-8% inflation hit.
Yep.
That is baked in the cake.
I was going to say 5 or 6, but hey,
Can I
elaborate a real stupid question at you? And I know
Now wait a minute. This goes on at this point, given this trend, it isn't 7 or 8, it's 15.
Okay, in order to track this like you do, this is a stupid question. I'm looking at the MTS, okay?
Yep.
I seem to recall, because I have somewhat of a memory, now what you see is the 2 months of this fiscal year and all of last fiscal year. I seem to recall above that were like the 10 or 15 years before. Those are all gone. Where do you go to get
that? You have to go back onto the page, the original page, and pull them up, but they're there.
They're there. They just got to dig for them?
You have to go to the original page, monthly treasury, go to past issues, and then, scroll down. Yeah, so, I mean, they're there. But they make it,
instead of just having them up there for grins, they don't do that anymore. They make you dig for them.
Well, it's not much of a dig. I mean, but yes.
For you, maybe not. But for me, anything's a dig.
Well, I'm just saying. If you like Google...
I just kind of liked them sitting right there when I was looking at them. I'm just saying.
Right, I'm just saying it. But if you like Google monthly treasury statement, it comes up with the current issue, and then down towards the bottom of the page is previous issues, right?
Yeah, okay.
You click that, and there they are. So, but the thing is that when you look at what's going on here, all right, there's two things that really stand out. I mean, there's increases across the board, and by the way, this 7-ish% inflation rate that is the real number. I don't care what the government's trying to tell you, is actually...
Why are they going to admit to 7 when they didn't admit to 20 2 years ago?
But the thing is, it is in all those other departments. Okay, so somebody tries to say that's not true. That's complete crap. The data is right there in your face if you look at it. But the standouts are in CMS, which is where the problem has been for a long time.
They're going to be back in defense.
Chief, the exponential, you know how exponential series work.
Yep.
Okay. I wrote an article a long time ago called On a Lily Pad. And it was, the premise of it was that you live in a place, you're fish. and you've discovered this lily that is extremely prolific. In fact, it's so prolific that it produces an offspring every day. All right? So, you know, where you had one, you now have two, right? Okay. And you plant these things, and everybody thinks it's fantastic because not only do the lilies take in carbon dioxide and expel oxygen, which the fish need, but in addition to that, they process the waste that the fish emit and turn it into useful things. So everybody thinks this is fantastic. Okay. Well, as you start to see the cover over the top of your head grow, at what point do you realize you're screwed? If you get to the point that the pond is half covered, you better kill every lily you can find immediately, because if not, the next day you're all dead.
Yeah, well.
All right, and this is the problem with exponential series. When you only have 12.5% of the pond covered, you're 3 days away from extinction, and yet it looks fine. And we are now in the exponential acceleration, and this is
we are still in a stage where if you screw the people I don't like and make them pay, nobody's looking in the mirror right now at all and saying I'm part of the problem.
Well, Chief, we are at the point now where the exponential acceleration, which I've talked about a bunch, we are now, and this goes all the way back to when I was running my company in Chicago, and I was doing employee meetings and talking about this was going to happen, and this was a serious problem because I had to track this stuff as a CEO. This was one of the things I had to look at, was where are the risks going to come from. Of course, I didn't know at the time I was going to sell the company ultimately, right? But my expectation was I was going to keep running it. And I said, look, this is, you know, these are the things that I have to deal with as an executive. You don't have to deal with these. Your job is to, you know, take care of customers or whatever have you.
Well,
my job is
we
to
do
deal
we do
with
own
these.
The place.
well, yeah. I'm saying, you know, my job is to deal with these higher level things. I mean, that's my job. And so, this was something that I started tracking at that point. And I said, look, you know, on this series, we get 20, 30 years down the road, and I actually put a timeline on this. I said 2024 is when the crossover occurs. Well, that was 30 effing years ago.
Hey, we got a dash. I have a question for you on Tuesday. If I can dig it out, or I'll find Lou. A lot of what we've talked about today, and we've talked in the medical community, has all of a sudden been a serious lack of any kind of competition, and
yeah.
With the government behind it, all right, or allowing it, for lack of a better term. Now, we're going to see some sort of an increase, although it's fall of Assad, and if these guys in Syria, maybe they turn out to be okay players. I don't know what the chances of that are, but maybe. All of a sudden, Iran looks like it's been denuded a little bit. Russia maybe too. So maybe our problems going forward are actually a little less than they were 3 weeks ago. I guess I can hope, Carl.
But I think you've got that backwards.
Okay, but yeah, okay, okay, but let's just I'm heading someplace here in my usual stumbling way. As we go to increase our defense spending, which it appears we are, the same sort of thing that we've seen in the medical community, this constant combination of big players. I'll find it. I'll see if I can find you for it. Or maybe you can find it. What did Lou outline? He sent us a thing about 8 months ago. In the last 25 years, how many combinations have there been in the Defense Department? Like 100? If we go out to start buying all this stuff, who are we dealing with? Five people now instead of 200?
Well, everybody, you know, the place where this is going to kill us first is in the medical system, okay? But it's not the only place where it is.
Well, let's kick that around on Tuesday, bud. I'm glad everything's okay. How much did you guys snow while you were there, or just snow when you got there?
No, we had the first day we were there, we actually got whited out about 2/3 of the day in. We bagged it because neither my daughter or I could actually see the runs at the top anymore. It was snowing so hard, which by the way is utterly glorious, other than the fact that, you know, for the first half a mile you can't see where you're going. Other than that, though, the conditions are, you know, you couldn't ask for better, right? I mean, it's coming down a couple inches an hour.
Carl, in the immortal words of a powder hound in Steamboat Springs one day, he said to me, only your skis have to see the ground.
Yeah, well, except that there are bowls that are, you know, 3 feet away from where you're skiing, that you will be skiing involuntarily if you're not able to see where the edge is.
All right. SP Futures up 18. NASDAQ Futures up 158. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks. Or back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.